Are you ready for this?
It's all out war on the All Out Cricket Podblast. When two sides go to war, go to war, go to war. We wade into the battle of the Gabba and throw discussion points at each other like hot grenades as both teams pick sledge-based shrapnel out of their pads and prepare to get in the ring for a second test slugfest. We talk phony war, war of words, Warner's war, Warnie's war, and we ask, war, what is it good for? Cricket? Possibly.
Hello, Phil Walker. Australia, this is London calling. Phil Walker, Phil Walker's walkabout. Phil, hello, welcome to the show.
Hello. Yeah, no, I am here, I believe. I'm absolutely here. I'd like to announce that it's 3:34 in the morning, live from the bush. They call it Alice Springs, which is a very kind of dainty name for what looks like quite a scary... an unprepossessing place.
All right, Phil, well, we're all very excited by the fact that we've got a live link up to the very heart of Australia. We'd like your impression, first of all, of that rabid Aussie press pack and England's reaction to it, if you don't mind.
Well, it's been an eye-opener for me. The last week has been cricket on a level that I've never seen before, and not just on the pitch, either off the pitch. It's been feverish. It's been a bit tetchy, to say the least, at times. There's been a degree of banter between the two sets of journalists that's even threatened to overspill in the press box, let alone what's happened with the players on the pitch.
Yeah, it reminds me, Phil, of the Linton Kwesi Johnson poem about the Brixton Rise. It's madness amongst the rebels. It's madness, madness, war. And that's probably what's at the forefront of all of the journalists' minds.
So beautiful. It's been a very literary opening to this show. It's been incredible. Phil, it sounds like, would you say, I feel like you're reporting from the front line, very much like Michael J. Fox in Casualties of War. Would you say it's all out war, Phil?
For want of a better way of putting it, yeah, absolutely. It's there's needle. And these two teams, they just do not like each other, and there's no escaping that fact. This is not some media narrative. They just do not like each other.
Do you think the last few days, and obviously the sad news that's come out about Jonathan Trott, do you think there'll be a level of contrition, at least off the field, if not on it?
No, not really. Warner was quoted as saying, you know, I feel sorry for Trotty, but this is the Ashes, and I said what I said for a reason, and that's going to be the tone of things. I think Michael Clarke is revelling in this kind of newfound nasty streak. You know, he's suddenly some kind of tattooed version of Alan Border that, you know, the locals never really imagined he could be, and they are obviously all over that. They want him to be tough. They want him to shed the old metrosexual image and to replace it with a hard and gnarled Australian skipper, and that's what he's doing. I just can't see it. I think, sadly, in terms of relationships between the two teams, once you get to Adelaide, the story of Trott will be, if not in our hearts, certainly in their minds, an old one, and it will just be all-out war again.
Let's give us some inside track on the England number three position. We're hearing reports coming out that it's going to be Root. Is that what you're hearing?
Well, when I first thought about it, I thought obviously it has to be Bell. You know, he's scored runs there before. He's batted at three many times throughout a brilliant career. But then in speaking yesterday to Joe, I do now lean towards Root, because I think you have an enormously exposed middle order if you do take Bell out of it and move him up to three.
What about the press pack itself and moving around? I'd be really interested to hear about what's happening with the England team and their attitude to the Aussie press and how that's going down.
Yeah, we've heard rumours of them ignoring the Aussie press. Is that true, Phil? Have you heard about that?
I have heard about it. And, I mean, Stuart Broad styled the England team as silent assassins. That's how he described them, just to continue our war theme here, fellas. After day one, England were pretty pleased with life, and that's when Broad gave the team that label. And it was it was a sly little snub, I think, as well to the Aussie press pack who hang around like a bad smell. And even when we turned up at the airport yesterday and we were on the same flight as the England boys, the place was heaving with press, you know, and that would never have happened if it wasn't for the Trot story. And so this really is now one of these cases where the whole country is whipped up and they're all desperate for a piece of it. But England's approach is always to be as buttoned up as possible, which is why it's so starkly symbolic, if you like, of their team's troubles. What's happened to poor old Trotty? They're going to be hurting a lot, the England boys, at the moment. And you could see it on the plane as well. It was a very kind of sombre atmosphere, really, to be honest.
Well, Phil, we've had worrying reports over here in Blighty that you found the cost of Australian food to be so exorbitantly expensive that you've fallen back on your diet of whiskey only, yes, and maybe even a Pop-Tart.
Well, listen, I don't want to paint a bleak picture here, and obviously kids drink responsibly, but I was Rod Marsh Mark II yesterday. It's just too expensive to eat, so I had kind of a savoury Pop-Tart thing on the plane and then just drank whiskey based.
How many dangerous animals have you come across? A lot of talk with George DeBell and Jared Kimber as to how they're going to travel across the country without being slaughtered by a backpacker killer or a great white shark. Have you encountered any grizzlies?
Funnel webs?
Well, I've only been here the day and have locked myself in my room to do lots of work and prepare myself, obviously, like a fine-tuned boxer for this evening's show. I'm liable to be extremely scared by the wildlife tomorrow. Brisbane was marked by lots of bats, just like these enormous comical bats. I actually thought they might be actors.
Phil, to continue the theme, you're a soldier, sir. And keep at it, you'll be due for a promotion. What a pleasure to speak to you live in the very beating heart of Australia.
Good luck, Phil.
Wow, how exciting. Phil, coming across there from the heart of Australia, a little down. Maybe needs to have set up his system a little better. I hear some of the journalists, it's like sailors moving from port to port.
Oh, I see.
But not for Phil. It's his first time out there. And of course, he's not
been out
like
there
that
before. Honestly, the way he's talking about it, you'd think he's on some sort of national service. don't believe what he says. He's enjoying himself. He's pretending he's not. But read his reports on allapcricket.com and you'll see just how much fun he's having.
Maybe it was 3:30 in the morning. That was the problem. Anyway, back to the theme, listener. There's always a theme with the show nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
And today it's war. C'est la guerre. Oui, oui, oui. Cook, quote, on the pitch. It's pretty much war, isn't it? Although, since it was Cook that said it, Ross, it would have been something like, on the pitch, it's pretty much war, isn't it? Because for some reason, Cook decided a while ago to speak only in staccato. So there you are.
That was quite Tony Blair-esque.
He's a powerful man, Cook. Mitchell Johnson to Joe Root, you're a pretty boy. I tell you what, if I was in a cricket match and was told that I was a pretty boy, I'm easily pleased. Flattery will get you everywhere.
Don't try and bring my confidence up.
Why are you building him up, Johnson? Anderson, complaining to the umpire like a school kid, he's stolen my ruler, sir, about George Bailey smiling at him.
He said he was smiling at
him. I tell you what, if I saw George Bailey smile, and it's a lovely smile. Why would anyone complain?
Well, it's quite a charismatic smile. Listen, the one thing I thought about that is that they were almost like, they went, look, that he was not, he threatened to punch George Bailey. He didn't like George. It's like they've invoked the George Bailey rule, that because he's the one nice guy that plays to Australia, you can't have a go at George Bailey.
You can't say you're going to punch him. No.
Look, you could say whatever you want about George Bailey. He's just another Aussie.
I can say whatever I want. It.
You can say whatever you want about him.
Anything.
Go on.
No. Not George Bailey.
Don't. Please don't. But they can't invoke George Bailey as this untouchable like figure. He's not a guy with two fingers crossed going, Bailey, can't say anything about George Bailey. Apparently I'm really nice.
I don't really know where that came from, but I agree with you, Ross. No, what's happening here? And I am now going to do something which almost every other pundit over the last day or so has done, which is try to deliver the veritable truth about the situation. Okay. Cut through the chatter, and in the act of cutting through the chatter, merely add to it. So effectively, here's my sixpence. What England are doing here, particularly with Warner and the comments that Warner's comments were disrespectful, is classic war diversionary tactics. And this is all a huge diversion to divert from the fact that England scored 130 and 180 odd in the last game. And it was reminiscent to my mind, and I don't know whether you agree, Joe, of Operation Bodyguard in 1944, where the Allies set out to confuse the German high command as to where the invasion of Europe would be.
I thought exactly the same thing, actually.
And another time, Joe, it did occur to me that maybe this is England using the tactic of feigned retreat, a little like the Trojan horse. They've capitulated to Johnson. The Australians have flooded onto the pitch only for England to slaughter them. And in particular, by capitulating to Johnson in the first game, perhaps they've encouraged the Aussie selectors to select him for the other games, where in due course they will slay him. Do you see the Trojan horse?
As they did at Perth last time, they let him take 9 wickets at Melbourne.
Exactly.
Played him around the park.
And one final overworked military reference, if you will. It did remind me, I must say, and Wikipedia wasn't at all any assistance in this regard, the Mongol armies, who always famously feigned withdrawal, the Mangudai were a suicide vanguard unit that would charge the enemy, break, retreat, and lure them onto more favourable ground, which they called, coincidentally, Adelaide.
incisive battle strategy.
You've outdone yourself.
That was incredible.
Well, the other alternative is England played like a bunch of losers. What do you think of that one, Joe?
Perhaps closer to the mark. I think we should remember that the bowlers did a decent job first up. It's not all doom and gloom. And the second time the bowlers came to have a go at Australia, they didn't have anything to bowl at.
No, that's right.
So everyone's criticising Swan, but an off-spinner on that pitch, when England, Australia can just chance their arm, Warner did, is really tough.
It's run pressure, isn't it? I mean, we can criticise them in the second innings for not taking the wickets quicker, but those batsmen aren't batting like they would if there was any kind of scoreboard pressure.
Absolutely, the game has gone, and particularly when there's a player like Warner there, that's when Warner can play his natural game. When Warner can't play his natural game is when you've scored 400 and Australia up against it.
Yeah.
And that's when he's more often than not buckled.
And yet, who's going to be dropped? Certainly, obviously, there'll be a replacement for Trott in due course, but who will be dropped? It will be a bowler. It will be Tremlett, won't it?
I'd have thought so. A lot depends. Breslin's got this 3-day game, hasn't he, for the performance programme, so a lot will depend on how he gets through that. I think if Breslin's fit, then he definitely, if he's close to fit, then he definitely plays, but he's perhaps one test away from doing that.
I've got an alert for the England team to do with that performance game. They made a little bit of a mistake. They seem to have picked 13 players for that game. So, message to you, Andy. Sorry to tell you over the, and not tell you privately, but it's 11 players.
You're not allowed 13, Andy.
What team, though? I want to see that match. They've got Mo and Ali, James Vince, Tymal Mills.
It looks really good.
Sam Robson, a really classy 11.
I mean, it may look slightly better because there's 13 of them.
Well, that was it. I mean, it's a strong 11 to count.
Maybe this is the answer. Maybe England should pick 13
more
for
players.
Adelaide.
That's what we need to do. More ready players.
Yeah. Ross, you and I had a little discussion earlier today. We cheated, if you will.
A tete-a-tete.
And it's fair to say that we have slightly disagreed on a few of the points. Mm. So let's lay the groundwork for that discussion. And we're going to call this section Warner Corner. But it may be this time we're not just supporting him, but a little criticism is going to slip in. So Davey Warner, if you're listening, just a warning for you.
Shut your ears.
Well, welcome to Warner Corner. First of all, just to correct a few things, a few people on Twitter have been abusing him on Twitter, saying you're pathetic, you sent Trott home, which is wrong. But a quick note out there, if you're planning to abuse Warner on Twitter, he's logged off and he's now on Instagram.
Yeah, he's dispensed with verbal abuse and he's gone with visual abuse.
That's nice. Well done, Davey. Well, let's start, in Warner's fairness, with what he actually said. And what he actually said was, quote, "The way Trotty got out today was pretty poor and pretty weak." Joe Harmon, is that disrespectful?
It's interesting because when I first heard those quotes, they didn't strike me as massively disrespectful. It didn't strike me. I've heard people say worse about each other. But it was interesting, the reaction of all the former pro cricketers he has apparently, for pro cricketers who have played this game, he has crossed an unwritten line that everyone knows you shouldn't come out and publicly criticise someone in that manner. So if everyone seems to be on board with that, and Warner himself has said he maybe went a bit too far, then he probably shouldn't have said what he did. We don't know the rules. None of us have played professional cricket. But
I don't think there are any rules. What's becoming increasingly clear is this is a war being fought by two sides where sort of the rules of the war are changing. Somebody's invented a tank and the trenches just aren't working anymore, because I think there's some confusion about what's allowed on and off the field now.
Everything's new. Everything you thought you knew about cricket is wrong.
Yeah.
It's all changing before our very eyes. You know, war often brings great innovations.
Yes.
And this is no different. Fashion.
The stump mic.
Poetry.
Yeah. I think the stump mic has the ability to revolutionise cricket. A Guardian writer the other day was saying, well, this is it. Just mic up the game. Then people will not say the things that they would otherwise have said. And if it's worth listening to, we'll hear it. What do you think of that one?
I think there's a nice bit of intrigue of hearing the odd thing from a stump mic. I think that's
Me
a great
too.
Bit of entertainment.
Yeah. A mystery about it.
I went on YouTube.
It's even better when you hear half the conversation as well, because then everyone jumps on the bandwagon and then someone says, actually, that's not what he said. You missed the other bit.
Yeah.
It's brilliant entertainment.
Yeah, and as you pointed out to me, I think earlier today, Ross, stealing your thunder, if I may. Everybody says, you know, stay on the field. Warne himself got on Twitter and said, keep staying on the field. Keep it on the field. Stay it on the field.
Stay it on the field.
And
did he say that?
He did.
Terrible grammar.
And then he quickly announced what had happened on the field on Twitter.
Yeah.
But that's Warne
well,
for
Warne's
you.
Warne's rules certainly are unwritten. I mean, they are. Yeah.
Well, Warne is the tank, isn't he? Yeah.
Listen, Warne, the thing about Warne is, I mean, what you've noticed from everyone, even from the fantastic feature which Damian Martin contributed to in the All Out Cricket magazine, when some of the old players were talking about the upcoming series, you realise that the Aussies are very much like the Borg in Star Trek. A million bodies, one brain. I don't mean they've got one brain between them. They like to have a collective consciousness. And what's absolutely incredible is they completely back each other up every step of the way, it seems. There's very little dissension from media to players to ex-players. And now Warne has broken free, like prisoner number six in the TV show The Prisoner, not to get too sci-fi. And he seems to say we've gone too far. Is this going to lead to some sort of confusion in the ranks? Phil Walker says no. They're going to come at it as hard, players and media, as they did before.
But he hasn't eaten for 24 hours.
But he hasn't, and he's hallucinating.
He says with a pinch of salt.
He's delirious.
But my question is, are they going to come? I have a feeling there might be some sort of confused reticence about the second test performance. Do they go hard? Are they a little embarrassed about what's gone on before? I don't really know. I mean, I think
they'll come out hard. They work like they absolutely like. We had got Mark Butcher as a columnist, I think I mentioned before, on the website, and he was talking about the kind of the evolution of this Aussie side, and it was quite interesting because he said under Ponting, the kind of war to Ponting era, they were so successful, they never really cared if anyone liked them. Even Australians thought they were a bit arrogant and kind of overblown, but they always won on the pitch, and that was all that mattered. Then at the end of that Ponting era, after that India tour, there was an effort to try and kind of win the hearts and minds of the people as well as win cricket matches, which worked briefly. And they kept that kind of nicey-nice attitude going, even as the sides got worse and worse.
Yeah.
And he said he's seen, and I think it's clear from the Brisbane test, that Lehman and Clark have sat down between these two series and said, hang on, enough is enough. We've got to stop being nice.
We've got to stop
we'll
being
go
nice.
Back to being the bastards
they are
we used
harnessing
to be.
The power of the mob now, aren't they?
That's interesting you say that, because Butch likened Clark to a mafia boss. there's nothing intimidating about himself, but he's got these henchmen bowling at 90 miles an hour. Who he can get to do his bidding.
While we're at it, actually, I know it's strange to big up another podcast, but I've been enjoying Mark Butcher and George DeBell as a combination on the Switch hit. They're like the odd couple, you know, Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau, and they're always disagreeing. So if you dare to listen to more than this podcast, if that other cricket podcast, if you're a multi-blaster...
Yeah, it's a multi-blaster.
...then enjoy the Switch hit, why don't you? All right, well, that's interesting what you say about Warner. I have to say my initial reaction was that that quote has been pulled and twisted, and it's certainly not disrespectful to my mind. But what we're going to do in the next section...
Do you talk about someone else's batting out? This is what I say. It's like talking about someone else's wife, isn't it? Someone else's mum. You know, talk about your own cricket, for God's sake.
That's right. I think it's the holier-than-thou attitude, perhaps, of certain... Andy Flower in particular and Alistair Cook. And that's what we're going to come up to in the next segment, where we will get holier-than-thou.
Thank you.
Okay, we go back to the source material again. We've gone back to the Warner quote, and I think we've stripped away a lot of the confusion. I think everything is quite clear for people now.
It feels different now.
It does. So let's move on to the next section, which is what Flower actually said in the press conference. He said that Jonathan Trott had been struggling with the condition for quite a while, but that Warner's comments were not directly related to that. Without being asked an intervening question that would take it onto another track, he said, as part of the same answer, "I would also say commenting on fellow professionals in the media is disrespectful. We set different standards. We don't like commenting on opposition players because we don't know what's going on in their private lives." So that's that's Flower in the press conference.
Yeah.
And that's the bit, I think, where I lost it. Because, and I know you'll disagree with this, Ross, because we've discussed it.
Yeah, I think you've lost it.
You can't go, what happened with Warner had no effect on Trott and it's separate. And in the same answer, but we wouldn't slag people off because effectively, we don't know whether they're going through a bad divorce or have mental health problems. Mm. That's just absolutely inconceivable. And I think it's a little bit naughty that those two have got linked into the same answer. And I think there's a very slight degree of self-righteousness in that answer.
I just think the whole world is making that distinction, Alan. For him to deny it would be rather bizarre. A lot of people are taking Trott's, and maybe they have something to do with each other. Maybe they don't. I'm pretty sure they don't, actually, from my point of view. Trott's been suffering from something for a while. You know, certain other members of the media know more about that than we might do on the Podblast. But listen, like at school, you take him away, you'd say, look, let Jonathan go. And it's nothing to do with you boys, but do you know what? I'm going to give you a stern look and say, that's not very nice. Because it wasn't very nice. And what do you do? He's like a child, like Luis Suarez, like all those sportsmen behave like children. What do you do? But you have to frown, tut, and move on.
And maybe so. Joe, here's a question for you on this one. Mm. If you have to be on the lookout for players going through some things, Andy Flower suggests, because we don't know what's going on in their private lives. So if you have to have one eye on people's private lives when you say things, why should there be a distinction between what you say about people in the media and what you say to their face? If somebody's fragile, why calling them something to their face in the middle of the pitch, is it fine and not fine off the pitch?
Well, I guess the distinction, if it's caught on a stump mic, then it's still going out to the public. But what their point is what you're saying is to their face. So there's no reason that is therefore going to be magnified to the rest of the world. Which is what happens if you come out and say it in a press conference.
Is that the distinction there?
I think so.
He doesn't say the words are going to twip them over the edge.
No, I don't think so. I think it's magnifying an issue that was already there.
Yeah.
But I agree with you to an extent. I think Flower, in some ways, is wrong to link those two without, as you say, a question break in a press conference there. But I think we've got to remember as well that the England camp will be a very emotional place to be at the moment. I think... not just from the defeat. I think I'm talking more about the what's happened to Trott in the last couple of days. I think Flower obviously knew what was going on. Cook probably did. But I think the rest of the England side probably didn't know about a lot of this. That's certainly what came out after just Gothic went home and no one had a clue.
Yeah.
So I think that camp will have been a really difficult place to be in. So I think there is going to be that level of, I can't believe you said that to Jonathan Trott because he's having such a difficult time. And that's not logical. But it is understandable.
Yeah, because they're hurt. Okay, they're reeling. I think I would have more sympathy for that position if it wasn't for the fact that James Anderson had a published feature in FHM.com yesterday, quote, "How to Sledge Like a Pro," and gave a profile in The Independent a little while ago saying, "I can't help sledging the Aussies." So whilst they're all terribly upset, it hasn't stopped them from pursuing their various
sledging
commercials.
Smiling is quite another, and that's where Bailey crossed the mark.
Yeah.
Hey, Matthew Hayden said it couldn't have happened to a more miserable bunch of cocky poms. So that's nice, isn't it? And if we're going to quote people, I'd just like to end on this section. I decided to find out what the rest of the world was thinking about this, and I went on the Hindustan Times website in India, which has a cricket section. And there was an article about it, which was relatively uncontroversial. Underneath was one lonely comment from a reader. His name was Kramesh. And I just want to read it into the record for the listener. Kramesh said, quote, "It's such a lonely world. Sensitive guys are dusted and done with."
Oh, that's nice, isn't it? But it's a little sad.
It is a little sad. So, yeah. Kramesh, if you're out there.
Poetic.
That was lovely.
Call in, mate.
And there's a lot of sensitive guys out there, Kramesh, and we all just want to talk.
We're three of them.
Okay, let's talk selection. Let's talk Adelaide. I've always thought Adelaide would be a very nice name for a girl.
Yeah, me too. Wichita is not a nice name for a girl, I think.
That's lovely. Well, all right. Let's look forward to selection. Joe, what would be your side for Adelaide?
Well, it's interesting. Phil said earlier that he'd changed his mind after speaking to me and decided that Root should bat at three because I said Bell should bat at three. He thought Bell should bat at three. But after speaking to me, I'd managed to change his mind.
The man's hallucinating. He's got some sort of... he's had too much war. Bullets flying around his head. He's got mental.
Post-traumatic stress disorder. Yes. He's got dengue fever of the mind. So you're going for Bell.
Bell bats at three for me. The reason being, I think the only reason to keep Bell at five is a negative reason. It's because we're afraid that he'll get out too early. And I don't think England can come back in this series with that. With that attitude, I also think Root got dropped down to six for a reason. That was only partly because Carberry was scoring runs. It was also because they're obviously a little bit concerned about him facing the new ball. So I don't really see what's changed in one Test match. So for me, it's Bell at three.
Yeah,
I'm going to agree rather boringly with Phil and go for Stokes.
Stokes really
as well.
Is he a good enough batsman?
Well, this is obviously the concern, and people say it's a wild card pick, but. It's a wild card pick with the other options being Balance and Bairstow, and then there's not a safe pick there. Bairstow is going to have the problems that all England's batsmen had mark 10 when they come to play at Perth in a test time.
Yeah, short
on
ball.
A fast bouncy pitch. Yep. So I don't really see bringing him in for Adelaide and then being concerned about what happens at Perth is a long term plan.
Yeah.
Balance I like a lot, and I would have had him in the side at the start of the series. Not allowing for this Carberry switch that happened, but he hasn't batted much. But he hasn't got a run for England yet.
Yeah,
so, he's got three ducks.
It's a difficult one. So that's why I would go with Stokes, because whilst it might seem like a wild card, I don't think there's much in it batting wise. And I think he'll be the sort of fiery character that I think England needs. And I'd be a little bit concerned about Bairstow getting thrown into that.
I mean, Simon Wilde said a long time ago, with stats that I think are wrong, but nevertheless the argument was right, that England will consider using left-handers against Mitchell Johnson. I wonder whether Balance has got more of a shout because Mitchell Johnson did so well.
Yeah, I think that is the case. Strauss has said a few times on commentary how easier England found it. England's left-handers found it to face Johnson. So that will obviously be in their thinking. I'd be wary of picking a side based on Mitchell Johnson because he's such a loose cannon anyway. Yeah. I referred to it earlier. We saw what happened. He took 9 wickets at Perth last time round and went 120-odd for 2 in the next test. So I don't think we should get too concerned with that. I think they should just pick the side that they think is best. And for me, that has Stokes in it at 6.
I worry that I'm putting mockers on it here, but having watched Mitchell Johnson pre-me going to sleep, bowling 2 inches outside leg stump so consistently I was bored. He then took wickets with such unerring accuracy. I just can't see him keeping it up. The risk of, I'm not trying to get back at him or have a go, but wow, he sprays it all over the place and he's jolly lucky to have got 9 wickets.
His action in that session where he kept slinging it down the leg side, they broke down his action. And it was miraculous that he gets it anywhere near.
I think Jared Kimber's completely right. He doesn't know where it's going to go. That doesn't mean it's not going to be an absolutely unplayable ball every so often. And he certainly got 9 of them the other day. But can he keep it up for 5 tests? Not on your Nelly.
Okay, well, that's one selection of a left-hander. From one to another with an interesting and smooth segue. Let's talk all matters cricket India quickly while we can, because the rest of the world is turning along with the Ashes. Zahir Khan. Reselected from the Indian Test squad against South Africa. What do you think of that selection, Joe?
I'm a bit surprised by it. They have obviously gone, it's a horses for courses selection, I think, in South Africa. They obviously want someone who knows what they're doing with the new ball in conditions which favour them. And at the moment, India's seam attack is very raw. I'm not sure how big that squad they picked is. Do you know how many are in that?
They dropped a couple from the last squad and added one, so it's probably about 14.
So, I mean, he might not necessarily play, although you think if they brought him back in then they probably will give him a run. I can't imagine he's going to be bowling particularly quick. Last time I was watching him bowl, he could barely make it to the wicket. But he is incredibly skillful.
He's been on a fitness course.
Okay.
And he has also lost his central contract. So it's an odd combination of things. And has been brought back into the squad almost as soon as he lost his central contract. Mm. Also returning to the squad is Jadeja, our favourite player.
I mean, inside Jadeja. What a dangerous
but
player.
India's continuing failure to select Pravin Kumar is starting to depress me.
Well, it gets you down, doesn't it?
It does.
I don't know
if he doesn't come to England this summer. I'm not staying in England.
You
I'm
love
going elsewhere.
Pravin.
I do. Dear He's a fantastic player, and I'm already looking forward to England India this summer. If you think England Australia's got needle, it's going to be an absolute stonker.
Do you think
it's
going to be more needle?
I cannot
there
wait.
Can't be more.
I think it'll be more needle.
More what? And on that slightly depressing note, it's time for the smooth outro.
Well, we solved that one, listeners. War, what is it good for? Cricket chat, I think. Last orders, gentlemen.
I want to pick up on just a couple of stories that have flown under the radar in all the Ashes confusion.
Sure.
Something
irrelevant. I want to talk about something irrelevant.
I want to talk about two things that are completely irrelevant.
Go.
Number one, Dominic Sibley, double centurion last year, yet to take his A-levels, picked up for Surrey on a two-year contract.
Very exciting. The
my story.
England captain?
Well, that's a hell of a call.
Saviour of 2018?
If we call it now and we're right, we can tell people.
Yeah.
And if we're not right, then nobody
we'll
will
just
have
ignore it. Yeah, we won't say it.
Unless
again.
Anybody's taking note, the NSA, because
yeah.
we're over intrusive surveillance at the moment, it could
wow.
be held against us.
This has got really weird.
A friend of mine played club cricket with Dom Sibley last year and said that he couldn't buy a run until he scored that double century at club level. Oh, yeah, they were about to drop him.
Really?
Oh,
extraordinary.
Really?
There we go.
And then they put him in the main side.
Put him in the main side, and he's called a double century. So, Dom, you're clearly somebody that likes to rise to the challenge. Someone else that rose to the challenge this week, Catching Peterson at the age of 23, Darren Sabag, I think, substitute fielder for Australia.
Remember the name? Like Gary Prayer. If you're out there, Gary.
See you after the next test.
Tweet us.